All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to Third Rail. We got another exciting guest for you guys today. We have Issa Amro. You may have heard of him. He's been in the news lately. He's a Palestinian human rights defender from Hebron in the West Bank. Issa, good morning. How are you doing today?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So, Issa, we will jump right into this. You've been in the news a lot lately. Obviously, we've seen on CNN, major news outlets, that you were actually the man who was actually pushed by the Israeli soldier. Can you sort of give your account on what happened that day and how have you been feeling since?
What happened that day is what is happening to many other Palestinian women and children and normal Palestinians who are living under the Israeli occupation and apartheid in Palestine. We face almost daily the Israeli occupation forces brutality and settler violence. I am a human rights defender and I usually lead tours in my own city, Hebron. I try to show the international community, the Israeli organizations, all the Israelis, all the Palestinians, the situation on the ground. I walk in a tour in a Palestinian city. I show how the settlers throw stones, rocks, how we have fence to protect ourselves from the settlers, how the city is closed with 22 checkpoints, with 1,800 shops closed, with more than 1,000 apartments closed because of the Israeli military closure policy. So we walk around and we reach a point, me and Lawrence Wright and a Belgium photographer, we reach a point where I'm not allowed to walk on that street. It's called Shuhada Street. So I'm allowed to walk on the graveyard and they are allowed to walk in the street. It's my own street, but I'm not allowed because of the Israeli military. So I was walking in the graveyard. You know, a soldier, they didn't like that scene that I'm showing, an Israel and a famous person or international person. He didn't know if he's famous or not, but later he knew. The closed shops, closed markets, closed streets, and I was telling them, look, this model will be all over from the river to the sea with the new current government because they are working to do Hebronization of everywhere in Jaffa, in East Jerusalem, all the mixed cities, and even other cities in West Bank. The soldier came and asked me to leave, not to talk to them. I told them I'm allowed, but we don't have time. So, Lawrence, can we meet there? At the same time, the soldier cursed the Belgian photographer and Lawrence with a very bad sentence. I didn't hear it. I saw it later. So I went and I met them where I'm allowed. I found the soldier forcing the Belgian photographer to delete her video. So I told him, what are you doing? You are not allowed to do this. You know, by the military law, we are allowed to film because we have tiny, tiny law, tiny, tiny rights as Palestinians. But, the Belgian photographer is under the civilian law even because we have two sets of law in the same area. The soldier refused. I started filming him and he said, okay, yalla, go away. I started leaving. It's in the video. You can see, I can, show it to everybody. The soldier stopped me and he said, delete your videos. It's a violation for the military law. It's a violation of my rights to film, document as a proof of what happened. Then he caught me from my shoulder as a sheep and dragged me into the street and detained me. He pushed the gun, to my chest. He kicked me with the leg and he was intimidating me. All the time, I started shouting to bring out commanders from the military base, which is just next, it's next to me. Nobody cared. Then the soldier, hanged me from my neck, from my throat, and pushed me to the ground. I fall down, and he kicked me again, and he just caught me again from my head, and he wanted to continue beating me up. So I lay down. I called the Israeli police. I called ambulance. I didn't get. And when I called the Israeli police, I asked for an ambulance, and they told me, "Are you an Arab or Jew?" And we can't reach Arabs. I told them, "I'm in a Jewish area. Please bring an ambulance because I was really traumatized. I was in pain. My arm, my shoulder, my back, my leg. Because I fall hard on the ground on the edge of the sidewalk, 40 minutes without medical treatment. And then settlers started gathering, Israeli settlers gathering around me, spitting on me, threatening me. Other soldiers were happy, rejoicing with the Israeli settlers. So I decided to call my brother and call my friends to come to pick me up. And I was carried away from there, and I get medication, and I'm now recovering. Then the surprise that the Israeli military saw the videos, and they lied about what happened. They accused me that I was the one who provoked. I was the one who had physical interaction with the soldier. And despite in the videos, you would see me putting my hand behind my back, not to give them any excuse for violence or not to make the soldiers feel any kind of threat from me. Then the Israeli National Security Minister backed up the soldier and described me as an anarchist. With all respect to anarchists, I'm not. And he said the soldier did the right thing, and you know, he encouraged other soldiers to do it. And that is the meaning. It's a kind of a green light to the soldiers to stop human rights defenders from showing their own city or, you know, talking about their rights. It means the soldiers will be much more violent with us, and maybe they will reach the point to assault us physically and maybe shoot us in the future. Because 18 years old soldiers, you know what happens. Then the fourth failure in the Israeli system is the media, the Israeli media. I've watched the Israeli media and I talked to the Israeli media, and it's rare that a Palestinian accepts to talk to the Israeli media. They described me as a professional provocateur who started what happened and described the soldier as a victim. Imagine that fanatic soldier who cursed the Belgium and the American, you know, photographer and famous writer, then pushed me to the ground and assault me physically and say many bad words to me, is a victim and I am the oppressor. This is how the Israeli media described it. And Hebrew is complex, and no one of them said the soldier is very wrong and the soldier should not do it again. Any other soldier do it, we should, we should, as Israelis, denounce him or, you know, condemn what they do. They give, and even they showed another incident happened on November, the Israeli media, and saying that Isa filmed that incident too. Yes, I filmed what happened on November when an Israeli fanatic soldier punished an Israeli Jewish citizen. And another soldier said that Ben-Gvir will make order and get rid of everybody. And he meant the Israeli leftist and the Palestinian, you know, human rights defenders. So even that, they don't want us to document, they don't want us to report, and they don't want us to expose the reality in the ground. They don't want us to expose the environment where Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Israeli fanatic, extremely political leader, where he grew. Because this environment created those kind of leaders in the occupied territories.
Right. And I'm glad to see you're doing way better. So you seem lively. So I'm glad about that. And I'm also glad that the soldier's actually behind bars now. So thankfully there was some justice served. And you mentioned Hebron is like completely complex. I've been there. It's super tense, and it's definitely a microcosm of the whole conflict as a whole. Now, you've had this experience obviously recently, but you're no stranger to harassment or trouble with Israeli authorities, soldiers, settlers. What are some other instances of that? I'm sure this is not the only one. I read that you were being indicted by an Israeli court for previous bogus charges.
Yes, I am an activist since 20 years. I am the Palestinian who created the idea of giving out cameras to the families to document the human rights violation, because I want an evidence. I give out cameras until now. I train women, I train kids to use the video cameras to really, you know, document their life under the Israeli occupation and apartheid. Yes, Hebron is really microcosm of the Israeli occupation, but it's all over like that, you know, in Masafer Yatta, in Jordan Valley, everywhere, you know, the occupation is harsh on the Palestinians. Israel is controlling all aspects of our life, all the details of our life as Palestinians. And me, I decided to choose nonviolence resistance as the only method to end the Israeli occupation and use a lot of tactics which will be highlight that what is happening, increase the awareness, protesting, rallies, documentation, tours, lectures, filmmaking, a play. Now I wrote a play with an Israeli with an Israeli writer. Her name is Inat Weisman. How to make a revolution, and it's about my trial in the Israeli military court, because according to military law, non-violence resistance is not allowed and it's illegal. So this is the point. According to the military system, we are not allowed to practice non-violence resistance. So this is why they indicted me in 2016 and they convicted me in 2021 on six military charges. One of them, as Americans, you will be proud of me doing it. You know, I went down to the street with Obama and Martin Luther King mask, walking in the street with I Have a Dream. This is, I learned it from the civil rights movement in the United States. And everybody in the United States these days, do these kind of things. And, Mr. King is the hero of many Americans. And he's my hero as well. But in Palestine, I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed for this. I was arrested, ill-treated, indicted, convicted in the military court for doing something similar for the peaceful civil rights movement in the United States. I was attacked. My house was attacked in the last 3-4 months, maybe 20 times. Settlers threw stones, kicked me, damaged my property. Soldiers did the same, arrested me, detained me, intimidated me, blindfolded me. Because really, they don't want any voice to take about their violence, and they don't want any voice to expose their apartheid. When I say that we have two sets of law in the same area for different people, that me, as Isa, I am under the Israeli military law, which means I am guilty until I'm proven innocent by law. I'm not allowed for non-violence resistance under the military law. And the settlers who are next to me, in Hebron, are under the Israeli civilian law. I say it's apartheid. They don't want me to tell American Jews, American people, European Jews, European people, Israeli Jews to really, tell them, look, this is what's going on the ground. They want to stereotype Palestinians as violent and all of them love to die. I tell them, no, Palestinians are normal human beings. They love to live in a quality life, not as we live now as Palestinians without any rights and we don't feel safe in our houses. Their policy that they don't evict us directly from our houses, but they make it impossible for us to stay and remain. How? We don't feel safe in our houses because of settlers and soldiers' violence and rape. Second, no services in the area where I live now, no municipal services, no other services. Ambulance needs a special permit to escape all the emergency cases. And no social life. You are living in a big jail and they control who comes in and who comes out. And it's not based on violence or non-violence. It's based on your opinion. Something else, surveillance all over cameras. They have their own blue wolf systems. It's profiling us. It's only against the Palestinians. I never saw that the Israeli military used their surveillance to make settlers accountable for their violence. So this is the point that with that much oppression, with that much violence from the settlers, who in November, it was Shabbat Sarah, attacked Palestinian houses, Palestinian shopkeepers, Palestinian vendors in the street, massive attacks. Hundreds of Israeli settlers were chanting, we will burn Hebron today, burn, burn Hebron. And they went down to the streets, throwing stones, rocks, physically attacking people. And those settlers are not accountable because we have violent Palestinians. But they are accountable and their families are accountable. On the other hand, the Israeli settlers, for their violence, I filed complaints this year from January 1st to January 10th, 5 complaints to the Israeli police without any accountability for the settlers who are attacking us. And now they are giving out more guns to the settlers. And even one of the settlers who's really crazy next to me here, and he appeared in many videos in my Twitter and my Instagram, got a gun recently, and he's only maybe 16, 15, 17 years old. So it's scary for us to face that kind of ideology of extremists, and they all the time say that let's kill more Palestinians. Yesterday, a politician, a lawmaker in Israel, Knesset member, said we should kill 50 Palestinians per day. As if our sheep or we are animals, again, they can kill us in the jungle. This is what we see, what we face as Palestinians these days.
Yeah, and obviously it's very unfair. And you know, as a Jewish American, my father is from Jerusalem. He's Israeli. I definitely sympathize. I'm very interested in your methods of you know, peaceful civil disobedience. You know, what you're saying before kind of reminded me that like you're kind of like a Palestinian Martin Luther King. How do you get into nonviolent resistance? How did you originally get into activism, and especially nonviolent activism, where so many other Palestinians unfortunately go the other way?
Jeremy, it's a very long answer. You know, you're taking me back to 20 years. You know, I was a typical Palestinian. The majority, by the way, the majority of Palestinians, they want to live away from politics. And my family wanted me to live away from politics because my father was raised as orphanage because the Israeli military killed his father in the 50s. So my father decided to disconnect us, you know, from politics. So I grew up in a family, you know, who wanted me only to study and play soccer. It's me who wants to play soccer. My family wanted me to. So they set me up that my dream will be that I will become a professor when I go, you know, older. That was my life track, and I was following it. What shocked me was the Ebrahimi Mosque massacre. In 1994, when Baruch Lichtenstein went into the mosque, killed 29 Palestinians and hundreds were injured, I became afraid to walk on the street alone. I saw anybody with kippah is an enemy. This is because of Baruch Goldstein photo with the kippah. I didn't know because my father didn't teach me anything. And as I started asking a lot of questions, what's going on? Why they do that? Why they close the streets after we were punished? Why the ideology of the Kahanists and the Kach movement were not really removed from Hebron? And because many Israelis asked to remove the settlers from Hebron when the massacre happened. But I continued journey. I continued my life toward my professor engineering degree. So I went into the engineering college 1998. In my last year, 2003, my last semester even, the occupation closed my university. So I went to the university. I found the university closed and they have a paper says that the university is closed for good. That was a moment I was ready to do anything to revenge. Broken, because I saw my future disappeared. Because I was planning to go abroad, even to Canada, to study there and stay there. That was my life dream. So I went back to my house, and I search. It was Yahoo. The main search engine was Yahoo, not Google as today. How to make a revolution? How to revenge? How to do anything? You know, this is what I was searching. Luckily, what came first was the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Jean Sharp, Gandhi, anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. So I said, okay, tactic, let's try to learn how to make a revolution using nonviolence. It was a tactic. It was not a strategy for me. So I went back to the students after 1 week, 10 days of reading, and I told them, okay, let's reopen the university using nonviolence resistance. Few, they started laughing at me. And, what was taking my power only, you know, let's do this, let's do that. I told them, no, let's try. And for me, it was about my education. It was an education struggle. You know, I wanted my education degree. It was not about to liberate Palestine. It was about my degree. You know, this is what I wanted to do. Luckily, with other students, and the majority of the students participated with me and with the committee we formed to lead the students to reopen the university against the Israeli military. Well, after 6 months of protesting and occupying the campus, I managed to get my degree. We reopened the university, but it was delayed 2 months. You know, instead of graduating on May, June, I graduated on August 3rd. And I graduated as an engineer and as an activist. And it became part of me. And I said, oh my God, it's working. And from that time, I tasted the victory of nonviolence resistance. I decided to help my people. And by time, you learn more, you are more convinced toward nonviolence resistance, to reach the point that it became the only way I believe it may make a change. And I established many groups, I recruited youth, trained youth, and trained women, families to join, because nonviolence resistance power is that you strengthen the civil society and engage everybody in the society. This is one of the main pillar of nonviolence resistance. And from that time until now, I'm doing different actions and different campaigns, flexibility, creativity. Because many people tell me, Issa, what we should do? Do I tell you what to do? Be creative, you know. This is, you know, be creative and make fighting the occupation part of your daily routine, and think about how you can, because it's not about giving out ideas to people. It's about how you can make the occupation costly. So Jeremy, now with your show here, with this podcast, you are making the occupation costly, because you increase the awareness among Americans and especially Jews about what's going on the ground. It's a big achievement. It's not something small, you know, to increase the awareness, to spread the word, to convince people, to act and make the occupation costly. And without making the occupation costly for the occupiers, nothing will change. We should do concrete actions to make the occupation costly. Giving Israel incentives is not working, because the American administration tried it, the Europeans tried it, and Israel is going more to the extremism. It's not rare. It's not one occasion, Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, Netanyahu in the government. They are the future. I see it among the soldiers, because for me, my sample to sense the Israeli society ideology are the soldiers. And the majority of the soldiers these days, who are a random sample from the Israeli society, are fanatic and extreme, very, very extreme. And their hero is Itamar Ben-Gvir, to be very honest with you, who I know personally, because I know him since 2006, 2007. He used to come to attack me when I was doing nonviolent activism near his house in Kiryat Arba to work a Palestinian land, to do agriculture in a Palestinian land. I know him, and his boss is next to me, Baruch Marzen, the follower of Meir Kahana and the leader of Kach movement, who Itamar Ben-Gvir moved by and was part and a member in that movement, and who had the poster of Baruch Goldstein in his office. So I used to see him a lot in my neighborhood in Tel Romeda. So we know each other very well. I know what kind of a person Itamar Ben-Gvir is, and I see him the future as well.
Right. And I actually do want to touch on the right-wing government and the outlook that Palestinians have on that in just a second. But just going back to nonviolent resistance, obviously there's radicalization, there's extremism on both sides. But since you have a very kind of intimate view of the Palestinian society, what do you say to Palestinian youth or any Palestinian general who, you know, might consider violent action?
You know, the majority of the Palestinians, the huge majority, they don't do anything. They are completely, you know, disappointed, and they want to protect their children. They want to keep a family, the majority. So I target the majority. And to be very honest with you, the Palestinians are oppressed, and they don't have any real, you know, life under the occupation. We are stateless. We are, all our life is controlled. Israel is controlling electricity, water, import, export, travel, anything, you know. Israel is controlling all aspects of our life. And even they are making it much harder on us to live, you know, under the occupation. They don't want the suffering we have. They want to increase it. Why? They're openly saying that you should be transferred to Jordan or transferred to Saudi Arabia or to Syria. Openly, this government, they say it. Tamar Ben-Gvir, almost, I heard it from him many times. And now he and his followers say it. So the people in Palestine, they are very disappointed. So I try to give them hope that we can make a change and tell them, okay, nonviolence resistance is not that much costly on us, despite that they arrest us, detain us, beaten us, but it's not costly for you. But how the occupation controls people, it's the work permit. They control not to do anything by your work permit, by feeding your family, earning, you will be blacklisted profile. So people, they don't want to be that, like that. And the people who believe in violence and armed resistance, I talk to them and they say, okay, but the occupation doesn't understand us and everything is not allowed. Because nonviolence resistance is not allowed. It's not something that I told them, okay, come and join nonviolence resistance and you will be okay. No, they will be targeted. So, the majority, I target the majority of the society to join nonviolent resistance. And my main enemy is the occupation, which is really, oppressing the Palestinians, and the brutality toward nonviolent resistance activists and the profiling them and going after them. And look to me, attacked, beaten, arrested, targeted. My family is afraid about me. My brother lives in Ukraine, in Kharkov. He's Ukrainian too. Called me from Kharkov when he saw the soldier beat me up. Isa, leave the country. Don't stay. They will kill you. I told him, you are calling me and telling me, and you are not leaving Kharkov, and you want me to leave Hebron? To be very honest with you. So this is how we feel as Palestinians. We feel threatened. We feel that the occupation have a huge power to destroy our life and make our life, very, very hard. And all the time they tell me, look what happened to Shireen Abu Akleh. The American Palestinian Christian journalist with Al Jazeera, who was killed when she was doing her job, and no one soldier is accountable for her killing. And so the army is denying that they shot her, despite that all the videos, all the CNN, the Haaretz, and the human rights organization said, Israel, you killed Shireen Abu Akleh, apologize and make the soldier accountable and compensate her family if it was in purpose. If it was not according to an order to shoot Shireen or to shoot journalists, or, I consider Itamar Ben-Gvir mentioning my name in his tweet and saying the soldier did the right thing, it's kind of a green light to other soldiers to shoot me, because the soldiers will know that they will have a minister, not a minister, very influential politician, will be, in their side, and the media will justify what they do.
Right.
And the army will lie about what happens. So this is what's going on. And to be very honest, we the Palestinians, majority of the people, when I talk to them, they agree with me. When I talk to the families, they say, but Isa, they may arrest our children, please. This is what is the argument. They agree that nonviolent resistance is the best method to deal with the occupation. But unfortunately, we're not able to break through, to have massive, because of the accountability on any kind of resistance. If it's allowed, you will see hundreds of thousands in the streets protesting peacefully, because it's part of our culture to really, it's part of a human being culture to protest peacefully. I think the people are born nonviolent, and they don't believe in violence. These are how I see it.
Right. So we've touched on this a lot, but I'm kind of curious, because it's really your lived experience. What is sort of daily life under Israeli occupation like for the average
the daily
Palestinian?
Life, yes, the daily life, The occupation controls electricity, and they don't sell us enough electricity, and we are not allowed to generate our own electricity. In Hebron, we are not talking about Gaza. I'm talking about Hebron. We don't have enough electricity for living. Why? Because the occupation controls us. They don't want us even to generate our own electricity. That is in the law. We are not allowed. Second, water. They control our water life. And we don't have enough water to live, to take enough showers, to plant trees. We don't have. And we are not allowed to dig to get water from the aquifers. And Israel controls the water aquifers in the West Bank. In the West Bank. I'm not talking about Israel. Then they sell us water and they don't give us the enough amount of quantity of water. Settlers have 10 times more water in West Bank, Israeli settlers, than us. So they control the water. So you have a water issue. Then import and export. If you have a business, everything will depend on Israel. Importing, exporting. And if for me, I can't do a business. First, work. Israel, the majority of Palestinians, Israel is the second employer. So if I don't get permit, I don't get work permit because I'm blacklisted. So they control our life with the work So you stay silent. You don't say it. You don't file complaints against settlers if they attack you. You don't file complaints against soldiers if you beat up because you don't want to lose the work permit. Then travel. Within West Bank, okay? In all over, we have around 99 checkpoints. Within West Bank, we have around 50 checkpoints. In Hebron, we have 22 checkpoints. You pass checkpoints all the time. I'm talking about set-up checkpoints, permanent checkpoints. I'm not talking about mobile checkpoints. For me to go to Ramallah, I pass 3 checkpoints. Modi soldier, you know, sometimes they make the traffic for hours. Ramallah takes 1.5 hours usually. No, with checkpoints, you may take 4 hours to go to Ramallah. You know, if you fly to Europe, you reach by 4 hours in plane. To go to Ramallah from Hebron, which is around 70, 80 kilometers, you spend 4 hours sometimes. And that, all the time, because the soldiers are moody, bored, and they want to check Palestinian cars. And then the traffic will be 4 hours. In Hebron, if you need an electrician maintenance in your house, you need a permit. If you need a doctor, you need a permit. A friend of mine came to visit me in Tel Romeda. She was denied because she doesn't live in Hebron. You feel not safe. Look what happened in Nablus. They want to kill fighter. They killed 12 instead of 2 or instead of 3. They shot live ammunition towards protesters. They went in the day, you know, around 10 a.m. in the morning, where it's so crowded and full of customers and full of people who are there in the occupied territory. And the soldiers invade city. On the other hand, if you live in Area C, you are facing eviction. You are facing settler violence every day. You are facing the army will not let you build a restroom. You are in tent. And you are not. They demolished schools in Area C. Schools, you know, I tell the army all the time whenever I meet them, education is something very important for people. Why you destroy and demolish Palestinian schools? We, the Palestinians, feel that we are alone. And then we are described as terrorists. We are described as people who love to die. Who says that? You know, we are normal human beings who wants freedom and justice and equality. And I tell the Israelis whom I meet, what do you want? Do you want one state solution or two state solution? Tell us. Because you are the ones who have all the power. And you are the ones who are occupying us. And you are the ones who are controlling from the river to the sea. They don't want one state. They don't want two states. They want us to be evicted. So as a Palestinian, you don't feel safe when you walk on the street. You don't feel safe in your house. You don't feel safe about the future. You think you will be deported in the future by this current government and the extremists. And unfortunately, these governments, we see that the United States and many other countries are backing them up and blindly supporting them without any conditions. It's a kind of contribution from the American people, you know, and American government to our apartheid, our occupation, to give that much, $3.8 billion, and the political blind support. If you love Israel, protect it from itself. Protect Israel from itself. Don't let them stay wild and want everything on the expense of our basic human rights. So the Israelis have a quality life on the expense of our basic human rights as Palestinians, because they control us in all aspects of our life. Today, it's, you know, tomorrow will be the anniversary of the Ibrahim Mosque massacre, the 29th anniversary. Today we have a protest, peaceful protest in Hebron. People announce, I'm not going, I'm afraid, to be very honest. They may shoot me in the protest because the soldiers see me as an enemy now who might be, you know, an easy target if I'm in a protest. They may shoot me on one of the roofs and say, oh, well, we don't know who did that. So this is how we feel as Palestinian human rights defenders and as Palestinian people under the Israeli occupation.
That's definitely a lot to unpack. How much support do you receive from Israelis?
You know, the Israelis, they have their own problems because they are going after them. You know, who are, you know, after the Israeli leftists and the Israeli human rights organization. So I'm facing a lot of attacks, and the Israeli human rights organizations, they are facing a lot of attacks from the Israeli soldiers. You know, the soldiers were treating me leftist, you know, because they hate the left in Israel. So we have a little bit of support, and it's growing now because Israelis now, they have to decide. It's a black or white. You know, you understand me. It's not gray anymore. It's either you are with the fanatic extremist or you are in the democracy and in the people, in the campaign of who are really resisting the occupation, because Israel will not be democracy with occupation. You know, this is what we tell all the Israelis. You should, build your democracy by ending the occupation, because occupation created this kind of leaders for you. The Kahanists and the extremists were raised in the occupied territories, and then we have I have some support among Israeli human rights organizations and some Israeli leaders.
I guess my next question would be, hold on one moment. So I did want to ask this as well, as you know, we mentioned Itamar Ben-Gvir quite a bit in Israel's government society increasingly moving right wing. What is the sentiment among the average Palestinian? I'm assuming they're afraid. What else are they thinking?
The majority of the, let me answer the phone.
Yeah, of course.
The majority of Palestinians are very disappointed from the new government in Israel, and they say, look, violent extremists in the government and the international community is not acting, it's double standards. Those leaders who became with that much power than even any other leader in Israel, the Palestinians think that they may work to evict us from Palestine. Palestinians see that the future is very dark. The Palestinians now think that massacres will happen, and Palestinians now think that Baruch Goldstein is coming back to life to do another massacre, especially in Al-Aqsa. So this is the fear among the Palestinian society and the Palestinian leadership, the Palestinian organizations. So we are really in a very bad moment in Palestine, and people are very, very angry and disappointed these days.
Of course. And now I was reading a bit that not only have you been targeted by, the Israeli government, but you've also been targeted by the Palestinian Authority. Why? What happened there?
I am very critical of the Palestinian Authority as well. I denounce their corruption and their dictator, and I denounce their human rights violations as well. For me, human rights violations are violations in spite of the offender. So we should work against any offender, and this is what I was doing. So I was arrested, ill-treated by the Palestinian security forces, who are acting as subcontractor for the Israeli occupation. They had a kind of coordination to get rid of somebody as me, who is really outspoken against the occupation and against the Palestinian Authority corruption. I am calling for reform for the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian Legislative Council and the PLO, to have a new Palestinian leadership by doing election and to reform and to, really fight corruption with the PA.
Oh, so thank you for your time. I just have two more questions, actually. I'm curious what your outlook on the future is, and what's your solution or perfect solution to the conflict?
I'm working now with other friends of mine in Palestine and outside Palestine to establish an anti-apartheid movement all over, from the river to the sea and from all over the world, to make the occupation and apartheid costly by doing non-violence action and leveling up Palestinians, because we are like this now. Palestinians are here and Israelis are here, to level up Palestinians by supporting economy, supporting education, cultural events, film screening and making films, and increase awareness in the international community. To be very honest, it's very hard to answer you what is the best solution now. If I say one state, two states, it's not about to find a good idea. It's about to find a good mechanism to make the solution possible. Because whatever we say now, Israel doesn't accept. Israelis don't want. The occupation doesn't affect them. So I want to make the occupation costly in Israel for the Israelis, to make them choose a new leadership and themselves recognize my rights to have equality with them, either with by one state solution or two state solution. So when we level up Palestinians to be equal with the Israelis, and we have international well, and we have enough Jews all over the world really support that Palestinians get their freedom, justice, and equality, it will be much easier to talk about ideas. Now, any idea is not possible, to be very honest with you. But the best idea that we organize ourselves to make the occupation costly and make Israelis recognize the Palestinian rights to live equally, either with one state solution or two state solution.
Absolutely. Well, Issa, this has been absolutely eye-opening. And shukran for being a guest on my podcast. I really appreciate it. I wish you best of luck, obviously. And please stay safe.
Okay, thank you very much, Evan.
Appreciate it. Have a good rest of your day, Issa.
Okay, you too. Bye.